This is an ABC Radio National podcast. For full details, abc.net.au/rn.
This is the Science Show on ABC Radio National, Radio Australia. But today's Science Show comes from the American Association for the Advancement of Science meeting in St. Louis, Missouri. Now let's go to a press conference that really promises to be even alarming. Changes in Antarctic and Greenland ice sheets. The main speaker is Eric Rigneault from the Jet Propulsion Labs in Pasadena in California. And the results that he's talking about were published in the journal Science as we speak, which you may have been reading about in the newspapers. It's alarming stuff.
I think at this point in time in our study of Greenland, we are witnessing enormous changes. The trend that we're seeing right now doesn't indicate any stoppage of the warming along the coast of Greenland. Now, what we found is that this is actually probably the dominant response of the ice sheet. And the mass loss resulting from this glacier acceleration in Greenland is very significant. These are very active glaciers. They all end up in the ocean, discharge icebergs, and they're very dynamic. Similar to the glaciers in Alaska, once you push them a little bit out of equilibrium, they start thinning and retreating really fast. So I think what this means is that, first of all, the contribution of Greenland to global sea level rise is higher than we estimated a few years back. It's increasing, and you should view predictions of what it's going to do in the future as very conservative, because they did not include some of the processes that we're seeing playing a big role right now in Greenland. So it's likely that Greenland is going to contribute more and faster to raising sea level than has been predicted by models. They're not lowering by a few centimeters. We're talking about tens of meters, and you see pieces of ice, you know, left standing on cliffs on the side of the glacier as a result of the rapid drawdown.
Eric Rigneault from the Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, California, with some alarming stuff about the Greenland ice sheet. And I've just been joined by Mark Chandler from Columbia University, who studies past climates, in fact, going back a very long way. May I ask you, first of all, whether you were surprised and startled by Eric Rigneault's statement published in the journal Science?
Actually, not at all. As a matter of fact, I've been expecting it.
But it's a startling melting, isn't it?
Yes, I guess it is. And you have to combine that, of course, with the studies that came out earlier this fall of increases in snowfall at the top of the ice sheet. So up on the ice sheet, we're actually getting increases in snowfall rate, and altimetry measurements show that the height of the ice sheet is growing in the center, but that seems to be more than counterbalanced by the increased melting around the margins, and how that all balances out is what we really need to know a lot better.
So. Yes, there's no chance that as it builds up on the top, say, of Greenland ice sheet or the Antarctic ice sheet, that'll compensate for the melting at the sides.
Studies of the mass balance currently show that it is not compensating for that, and I think that the talk on Saturday and the paper that will be out in Science tomorrow will actually sort of lend more evidence to the fact that the melting margins are a great concern.
As your own work, how far back do you go?
Well, my particular research looks at a time period called the Middle Pliocene, which is around 3 million years ago and has the significance of being the last great global warming time period prior to the Earth entering into our recent ice age climates. And the concern that we have from looking at the Middle Pliocene is that we have a 2 to 3 degree centigrade warming at about the same level that we expect within the next 100 years on our planet here. And yet, sea levels were 15 to 25 meters higher than they were today, associated with melting of the ice sheets.
That's gigantic.
It's gigantic, and that's not going to happen within 100 years. I can say that the melting of the ice sheets is very unlikely to be at a rate anywhere near where we could get 15 to 25 meters in 100 years. But the 0.2 millimeters per year sea level increase, which we're seeing now, is going to accelerate. And the fact of the matter is, even a few meter sea level rise, which, you know, I guess that's becoming more plausible as we look at evidence of what's going on in the current ice sheets and in the past, that this sort of a few meter rise is becoming more plausible. And that in and of itself could be devastating for coastal regions and low-lying countries and Florida.
Yes, indeed, Florida. Good luck to them. And as for the Netherlands, when people say that it all happened before and here it happens again, is there an excuse to be sanguine about it, to say here comes the same old thing?
Well, the same old thing happened at a time when humans didn't exist on the planet, and humans evolved during a time period where climates were much colder, not much warmer. And I leave it up to economists and social scientists to figure out how would we be affected by changes like what does a 2 to 3 meter rise in sea level mean to the global economy and to society. I suspect it means a lot because, you know, you can look at any coastal region in the world and find out that that's where people like to live. And so from the standpoint of what does it all mean and have we been through this before, the Earth has been through this before, and it was stated in our session that most of the scientists aren't, we don't have any concern that life is going to end on this planet. But what we are very concerned about is that the life that humans are used to could very easily be turned on its head within what is a relatively short period of time, you know, say a century.
You know that there has been some concern about the suppression of scientists who've in your field, saying what they really have found and its implications. There was last week in Australia some discussion of the suppression of similar sorts of findings by CSIRO people. And I think you know Dr. Hansen from NASA has said that he was made to soft pedal his concern. Do you know Dr. Hansen and how he's feeling now?
Yeah, Dr. Hansen is the head of the institute that I work with. I work at Columbia University, and that's a NASA facility. But what do I make of the general situation? One of the things that I make of it is that there clearly is a general policy in this country right now to stifle scientific viewpoints that don't marry well with political viewpoints. And I would actually rely on what the head of the House Science Committee in his reprimand of NASA's policies made the point, by the way, he's a Republican, made the point that politicians should be vetting their comments based on the science, not the other way around. And most of the people I know who work in this field are extremely apolitical. I mean, you know, we're a lot of geeks, and we are really, for the most part, not interested. But I suspect when you've essentially been saying that your findings since the late 1980s have pointed towards some pretty serious problems associated with global warming, and that more and more and more there's a consensus on that over a 20-year period, you start to get a little frustrated at some point in time.
You've spent your whole career, like Hansen has, working on this stuff, and you're told to stay stum. I suppose it's rather frustrating.
I'm sure it is. I have not talked to Jim specifically about how he feels about the whole thing, but I can't imagine that it's not incredibly frustrating. And my attitude certainly has changed since I started as a young scientist 18 years ago, and now I'm a middle-aged scientist with little kids, and Jim is a scientist who has grandchildren now and sees things in his own science and in the work that we do that is a concern to future generations. And you have the choice of just sitting in your office with your computer and ignoring the fact that public officials are not paying attention to you, or you can try to get your word out at scientific meetings. But one mechanism that NASA actually promotes is to put out press releases. It's just somewhat unusual that their press releases about some science are played up more than other press releases are. And it, to the extent that that policy got fairly politicized over the last year, that is a concern. But is it any different than stem cell researchers or evolutionary biologists? You know, there's a general problem right now with the fact that we are not getting our politicians to vet their comments based on science. Instead, we have a situation where our scientists are having to worry about what they say. Can you see me sweating right now? Worry about what they say based on a certain political stance that exists right now in a particular administration.
Mark Chandler from Columbia University, thank you very much indeed. You've been very kind. And in fact, the next session we're attending is indeed on stem cells, equally controversial. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Professor Mark Chandler at the AAAS meeting in St. Louis, Missouri.